He spent 30 years on Albert Square, but he joins me now to talk about his new audio autobiography and his new single. A very good morning, John Altman.
Morning, Charlie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm pretty good, yeah. I've done my exercises. I've got some coffee here, so I'm ready to rock.
Lovely. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. And you mentioned rock, and we're going to be talking quite a lot about music and your new single and your new book. But, first of all, we can't have you on without talking about EastEnders.
No.
From episode one in 1985 until the 30th anniversary special in 2015, you played Nasty Nick Cotton. The big bad boy in the UK. Looking back at 30 years in the soap, what memories stick out most?
Well, there's so many. I mean, I think probably I've got about four actually. I actually shot, there's a bit of trivia for you listeners out there. I actually shot the very first scene on the outside on the square, which we call the lot, with Ned Stetsali, who played Ali. And so, historically speaking, that was the very first scene ever filmed on EastEnders. Okay. And, when I first met June Brown, I was in first, and then she came in a few months later. We got on so well, and so that was great, and that friendship has lasted to this day. And my real mother said she looked more like my mother than she did. Quite funny. I suppose, yeah, there were so many. I mean, there was the heroin addiction, that was, you know, for an actor, that was quite something to put myself through. I found it quite exhausting, and it was a very powerful storyline. And then at the last scene at the end, when Nick dies in the squat with Dot, that was quite emotional, I must say. And there was a lady who was the floor manager. She said, "I'll never get. I promised myself I'd never get emotional when I was watching any of the filming on this program." And in fact, it brought a tear to her eye. So she was quite a hardened. Technician, if you like, or floor manager, and she was moved by it. In fact, I was myself actually when I watched it back first. I watched it technically, and then I was quite moved myself. It brought a tear to my eye even just watching it, seeing myself and June. And I guess it was the end of a long working relationship too. So that was quite sad.
Yeah. Yeah. They do say on EastEnders nobody's ever killed off for sure. I mean, we did see Nick Cotton there dead for quite a while, but I mean, could they ever bring him back?
Gosh, the BBC would have to answer that one. as you say, anything can happen in soap, can't it?
Yeah.
I'll say no more.
Yeah. Nick Cotton was recently voted one of TV's favourite villains. What was it like going out and about years ago as such a notorious character?
Well, I couldn't work out why people kept shouting Nick at me when on the credits on the screen it said John Altman as Nick Cotton.
Yeah.
But I soon got over that and had to get used to being called Nick out on the street, you know. I think people tended to keep away more than come up to me in a friendly way. If I'd been playing a nice character in some hospital drama, perhaps they would have come up to me. And I've heard that said that when people play doctors on TV, people come up to them with their ailments and show them their scars and all kinds of other horrible things.
Yeah.
So I suppose, yeah, people kept away and they just shouted stuff out of vans and things like that. Yeah. Be nicer to your ma was a common thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Now, people most recently saw you probably in BBC One's The Real Marigold Hotel,
mm-hmm.
The series inspired by the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, the film.
Yes.
And you travelled to India with Duncan Bannatyne, Susie Blake, Barbara Dixon, Paul Chuckle, others as well. How fun!
Chris Eklund.
Yeah. How fun was that to film?
It was great fun, but it was quite hard work because we were on the go solidly for about 3 weeks.
Wow.
And but they were a great bunch of people. First of all, I thought I was on holiday. I kept having to remind myself I'm not on holiday. And I was putting a microphone on me, and the camera was staring at me across the breakfast table. So it was great fun actually. I saw a lot of changes over there. Like, for example, women riding motorbikes. That wasn't happening 50 years before when I was there.
No, you
were... Mobile phones had come in, of course.
Yeah.
But I think generally, I mean, kind of on the streets, you know, spiritually, visually, it hadn't changed that much. As I say, you know, technologically it has, but right down there on the streets it hadn't. Yeah. So it's great to go back.
Because you travelled in your youth, didn't you, all around India? Was it a year?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I left home when I was 17. left my little home in Herne Bay, Kent, and headed off. I went with three male friends. We travelled in twos. We went right across Europe, Belgium, Austria, Yugoslavia, into Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, and I ended up on my own travelling around India at the age of 17. Had my 18th birthday out there, actually.
Wow.
So that was quite an experience. I certainly grew up on that trip.
Quite eye-opening.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Now, this time of year, usually you'd be in rehearsals for pantomime. You did your first panto in 1985.
Yes.
And then I think apart from 2001 and obviously this year, you've done panto every year. Is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. I did. I was in Chicago the Musical one year and I was in Oxford performing in that. But apart from that, yeah, I think I have. I've done probably over about 34 pantomimes, I should think.
Wow. We can call you a veteran panto performer then, can we?
Indeed,
a veteran of panto.
Yes, I am, yeah.
What are some of your most memorable panto experiences?
Well, you were asking me that before. A few times back, I think my entrance in Peter Pan in Wolverhampton was the most spectacular that I ever did.
Right.
And
what did they do?
That was amazing. They built this huge, great ship, which they managed to keep in the wings. And I was on board this ship, right at the front. All the crew had blazing torches. And I was announced by this pirate with an animatronic parrot behind this gauze. And then the ship came on with all these blazing torches. And it was huge, I tell you.
Wow.
It filled the whole stage. And up high in the sky above was the moon and the stars. And launched into a sword fight. And, yeah, it was just the biggest and the best, yeah.
Wow.
A couple of years later, I performed in Stockport. And I was carried on in a chair by four pirates.
Bit of trust.
It all gone downhill a bit.
Well,
there you go.
You mentioned your friendship with June Brown, and you still talk today. You did do a pantomime with her, didn't you?
Yes, I did, actually, in Lewisham. But, that was Peter Pan. She played Captain Hook's Ma, which is an interesting bit of casting. Yeah, I'd be ranting and raving as Captain Hook, and she came on and say, "Now, Wilkie, that's enough of this pirate malarkey. Yeah, sort yourself out." So, but sadly, she got pneumonia about a week into the run, and I had to leave, which was a great shame. But we did a couple of weeks anyway. Yeah.
Oh. Mm. Now these stories. I mean, you can tell I've read your autobiography, In the Nick of Time. It was first published in 2016, but now you've done an audiobook. Of it.
Yeah, did that. Managed to do that in a studio in Chelmsford for B7 Media. Not the lovely Helen Quigley and Andrew Mark Sewell.
Yeah.
We re-recorded the whole thing, which was quite a job, actually. And we put in three new chapters at the end as well. Because my mother passed away just as I was about to publish the book.
So I
put down one chapter devoted to her, actually, that whole experience, which is... for anybody losing their mother, it's quite something, isn't it? Forget, obviously, you always miss them. So, also my travels, I've done quite a bit more travelling, so I put all that in, and changed some of what had been written before. So that's all available on Audible.
Audible.
You can get that on Audible, yeah. There's also an outtakes, 5 minutes of outtakes when I mucked it up, so that's quite... they're quite amusing, actually, yeah. Because when you've been stuck in a box all day, you start to lose the plot a bit. Words don't come out properly and things, you know.
When you, I'm used to that, hearing your own voice in your ears as well.
Yeah,
headphones on. Yeah. You're here to talk about your new single. Or say here, you're over the phone. We have to say that because of social distancing. This is a phone interview, but you have done a new single, and music has played a big part of your life. Definitely in your youth, you saw many famous people live. Which gigs stand out most?
Ah, well, that has to be probably in the early days. I saw The Who at Margate Dreamland Ballroom, as it was called then. That was incredible. And then hitchhiking home, Pete Townsend, the lead guitarist, rock god, gave me a lift home, and my friend Paul Fitchie as well.
Wow.
Gave us a lift home in his big American Cadillac and dropped us off at our houses on the way back to London. I couldn't believe it.
That would not... wouldn't happen now, would it? That.
Probably not. No, I don't know. Then I also I saw Jimi Hendrix at the Central Hall in Chatham. Well, that was it. And I met him as well. You could just walk backstage and there wouldn't seem to be any security at all. Went in and chatted to him. He was on tour with the Pink Floyd, a band called The Nice, which was Keith Emerson. It was later Emerson, Lake and Palmer. So I saw the Rolling Stones do their free gig in Hyde Park too. That was quite a memorable gig with King Crimson. So yeah, those are the best early days that, oh, wow, I saw. I have to mention also I've got an album coming out a week tomorrow, which is called Never Too Late to Rock and Roll. It'll be available on all the streaming facilities out there. My first ever album of original tracks.
We will come on to your single as well, and we'll talk more about the album. You mentioned The Who, and whenever I speak about The Who, I have to play The Who. So I thought we'll play them now, and then we'll come straight back. We'll talk a little bit more about your connections to The Who, and people will know what we're talking about, and then we'll move on to the single. So here we go, The Who,
okay,
Pictures of Lily on Susie.
I used to wake up in the morning ever since.
9:20 on Susie Radio. I'm with our very special guest, John Altman. We just played The Who there, and of course, you met Pete Townsend, you said, after the gig in 1966, but everything came full circle when you then starred in Quadrophenia.
Yeah, I loved the album, and I was seeing a casting director called Patsy Pollock, and she was casting Quadrophenia, and she put me up for Sting's part, the face. I didn't get that, but I'm probably a better dancer than he is. There was always this joke about his dancing for some reason on set. Anyway, so I didn't get that part, but I was asked to keep with the unit with a bunch of other actors. As a small group who they were going to be writing it along the way, so I ended up being in lots and lots of scenes, and it was a great learning curve. Actually, it was like the first major film that I did with dialogue. Anyway, I've done one before that called The First Great Train Robbery, but yeah, so that was once again Pete Townsend came into my life and The Who, and I still love listening to their music. Great to hear that track again. I think in my archives I might have the poster for it somewhere.
Was in Quadrophenia alongside Ray Winston, Phil Daniels, brilliant actor Timothy Spall. It now has cult status, doesn't it?
It does. There's been all kinds of anniversary screenings, and I did a big thing at the Shepherd's Bush Empire last year for Sky. They had virtually all the cast, myself included, Toya, etc., on stage, and we read through some of the old scripts and talked about the old days. It created quite a bond between everyone, actually. There's probably one of the biggest times when I've worked on a production where I've kept in touch with pretty much everybody.
Going back to your days before Albert Square, and talking about music being a part of your life, you played somebody from one of the the biggest band of all time, really. Not John, not Paul, not Ringo. You were George Harrison in Birth of the Beatles. Tell me about that.
I love the Beatles as much as I love The Who, and George was actually my favourite Beatle. Because you had to have a favourite Beatle in the playground at school, so I went for George. I thought I looked a bit like him because my ears were quite large, you know, dark hair, whatever, dark brown eyes. Anyway, cut a long story short, I took my picture around all these casting directors in Soho, and Beth and Esther Charkham on Shaftesbury Avenue there, they had an office, so I dropped my photo in. They put it on their pin board, and when they were casting this film, they looked at it, I thought, John might be okay for George. So it was quite a lengthy casting process. Luckily, I had some tapes and recordings of George's voice, and I listened to those. And over probably about a month or so, we did Polaroids, and we did videos. We all sent back to Los Angeles. Eventually got the part, and that was something else. I mean, we all bonded as well, the four actors.
Yeah.
And, it was an extraordinary experience. It's not actually that readily available. I think you might be able to find it somewhere, some dodgy copy on Amazon. I don't know why. It never had a proper DVD release, but I think the Americans owned it. I've got it on a video here somewhere.
I've seen the pictures, and you certainly do all look like the Beatles all together.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful experience. We shot in Liverpool and Hamburg and around London as well. And once again, quite sad when it all packed up because we become a bit like the Beatles ourselves, mucking about and having a good old laugh. You know, had a wild time in Hamburg as well. But I won't go into that. It's a bit early in the day.
In 1974, you taught yourself to play guitar, and you've played music your whole career. You've fronted a few South London-based bands, and you've performed solo. You've now got the brand new album. How did that come about?
I met Mark Christopher Lee at a TV studio, Nub TV on the Embankment. Cut a long story short, I told him I'd got some music that I'd been recording over the years, and I've been doing it for a long, long time, actually. I've been in loads of bands. We haven't got time to relate every one of them. But, so I went up to see him in his studio near St Albans and played him a couple of tracks. He liked them, so we recorded one or two, and then we did another one. He said, why don't we do an album? So it kind of came about in a kind of organic way, you know, it just naturally progressed, and then we ended up recording the 12 best tracks that we thought would work, and that's how it all came about. So I was doing that over the last 18 months. In fact, it was only about 2 weeks ago we did the very, very final mix, because I wanted it to be as good as possible, and so it's out next Thursday. Never too late to rock and roll. It's quite an eclectic mix of music. It's we're talking about my experiences in the 60s, etc. I've been into music ever since I bought Venus in Blue Jeans by Mark Winter a long time back. And we had music in the house. And as you say, I taught myself to play drums and guitar. So it's been a long road. So it's a dream come true having this released.
Wow.
And I hope everybody likes it. I think it should appeal to a lot of people across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're going to play the main single from the album in just a sec. We have to call you a different name, though. You're Johnny Altman for this album.
Rock and roll persona. I was Johnny Rio once back in the punk days when I had a band called The Hitmen. That sort of faded away. But, yeah, there's another musician called John Altman. And I met him, actually. And we're actually friends. We actually did a showing at Graham. What was it, a jazz evening on the King's Road once? It was John Altman presents John Altman. But in this case, I'm Johnny because we don't want the checks from the PRS to go to the wrong people. So, I couldn't really change my entire name. So I think Johnny's pretty rock and roll, don't you?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
the video is now online. We're going to play Hallucinating You, the single, and that's going to play us out. So I'm going to say a big thank you for your time this morning, John.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure, as always, catching up with you and having a chat.
Yeah.
And everybody, once you hear this song, you're going to want to buy the album, so make sure you check it out. When's it available? Next week, you said?
Next Thursday it's released,
Thursday.
Never too late to rock and roll. Yeah.
Brilliant.
On all the good streaming sites and downloading you can muster. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much, John.